Hello and welcome to what I know is going to be a great hour with Jack Canfield. My name is Bill Harris, Director of Centerpoint Research Institute, and it's a great honor to introduce Jack to you. Jack has shared with me what he's going to talk about, and you're going to be very glad to hear what he has to say. As you know, this is a very special audio training. Jack's list of achievements would take much too long to describe here. He's best known as the co-creator of the New York Times best-selling series Chicken Soup for the Soul, which has 150 books in print with astounding sales of over 100 million copies in 39 languages. His latest bestseller, The Success Principles, has been on the New York Times bestseller list, and he's been featured on more than 1,000 radio and television programs, including Oprah, 2020, CNN, The Today Show, Larry King Live, PBS, and many others. In my opinion, there's no one more qualified to teach the principles of success. His teachings have greatly impacted my life, as well as the lives of my students and clients. With that said, let's turn it over to Jack.
Well, thanks for that great introduction, Bill. That was fabulous. I really appreciate it. I'm going to share information with you that can literally change your life, but you need to have all of the information. I'm going to give you as much as I can in 1 hour. And, obviously I do 7-day workshops, so 1 hour is just a little piece of that. But my commitment is to give you as much as I can that can literally change your life. I want to remind you that these principles and strategies for success only work if you work them. As I say in my new book, The Success Principles, the principles always work if you work the principles. And these principles are like gravity. They're universal laws that always apply whether you are aware of them or not. As my friend Jim Rohn says, you can't hire other people to do your push-ups for you, which means that you have to put them into practice. So write down as much as you can. I want to ask you to review these notes before you go to bed tonight. There's research about that. I won't go into it, but trust me, always read your notes that you took that day before you go to bed. It actually furthers the transfer from short-term memory to long-term memory. And then decide which of these ideas you're going to act on first and write them into your schedule. What we now know is if you don't get it into your calendaring system, it's not going to happen. So get it off the list and into your schedule. Get it on your calendaring pages, put them down on your to-do list, but make sure they're dated when you're going to do them by. Now, as most of you know, I've published the most important book of my life. It's called The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. It's already been on every major bestseller list, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Publishers Weekly, USA Today, the Dallas Morning News, you can go right down the list. And the reason it's so successful is it covers 64 principles of success, which are guaranteed to change your life. And I'm going to share as many of these principles as I can with you on this call. Now, why so many principles? Why not 7 or 8 or 3 or 4? Because it's what's required to create the breakthrough levels of success that I know are possible for you. Think of cracking the code of success like figuring out the combination to a combination lock. You need to know all of the numbers, and you need to know them in the right order. And unfortunately, many of us have half the numbers, or we don't have them in the right order. So literally, I've put together a roadmap that you can use. You can always access the book or the tape program that's available as well. You can go to our website, thesuccessprinciples.com, go to amazon.com, go anywhere you want to go. All the bookstores have it. So let's start. The first principle I'd like to discuss, and it's obvious, but most people don't do it. You have to sit down and decide exactly what you want. And what I teach is you need to decide exactly what you want in 7 different areas of your life. Not just money and career, which are 2 of those areas, but you also need to have specific measurable goals for your relationships, for your physical health and fitness, for the area of your life I call recreation and fun, for your personal area, which I call just things you want to do because you want to do them, like learn to play the piano or go to France for a summer vacation. And then finally, the contribution or legacy that you want to leave to the world based on your experiences. Now, here's the deal. All 7 categories are critical to create a balanced life and a fulfilling life. If you're only pursuing money and career, you're going to leave out the most important parts, which are your relationships, family, kids, parents, spouse, all of that. And what if you lose your health in the process? What if you never have any fun along the way? You're waiting until you retire. Well, some people never get there. And personal, Just, you know, we now know that if you just do things that make you feel good, it actually contributes to your success. We'll talk more about that. And then finally, contribution or legacy. I met a guy last year. His name was Greg Barron. He was the owner of the Seattle Seahawks at one point in his career. He's a billionaire. And he said he went through four stages of his life. And the first stage was called more. He wanted more stuff. He figured if he had more stuff, he'd be happier. Well, it didn't make him happier. So he figured he needed better stuff, a better car, a bigger house, whatever. So he went out and got all that stuff, and he still wasn't happy. And then he said he went through the different phase. He figured, well, I just have the wrong stuff. And that's when he said, I bought the Seattle Seahawks. Well, he still wasn't happy. And then one day, one of his other multimillionaire friends said, look, I've chartered a plane, and I'm going to take a bunch of wheelchairs over to Bosnia and Croatia, and we're going to give them to kids who've had their legs blown off by the landmines and other kids who were just born deformed, but they can't move around. They just hide them in the back of the house. We want to give them mobility, give them self-esteem, give them a chance at life. He said, we got on the plane, we flew over there, and we got the wheelchairs out. We started putting kids in them. And he said, the first kid I lifted up was an 11-year-old boy, very skinny. I said, I put him in the chair. I started to go away to get another wheelchair, and the boy wouldn't let go of my leg. And he said, I looked back, and I looked down, and there were big tears just streaming down his face. And he said, the boy was just looking up in his eyes saying, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. And he said, I felt pure joy for the first time in my life. And he said the last segment of his life he now calls purpose. And he realizes that ultimately our purpose is to serve each other with the expression of who it is we really are in the world. So he started the foundation now to give wheelchairs to kids in third world countries. But here's the point. Don't leave that area of service to others out of your game plan. If you have that as part of your career and making money, you're going to make more. If you make other people successful, you're going to be more successful if you serve their real needs. A friend of mine named Mike Millhorn down in Dallas, Texas. He said he had to think out of the box, but he was always looking for how can I fill the needs of others. And he noticed when he was an Avery label salesman, he would go into these stores, restaurants, everywhere he went. And one of the things he noticed in restaurants when he was selling them labels was they would label the food Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday when it came in, so they could use the oldest food first, so they'd always have, you know, not the rotting food sitting in the back. They always wanted to keep it in a proper rotation. And he said the problem was these labels were falling off the food when they put them in the refrigerator, and they had to label them with magic markers and things, and often those would run when they got moist. He thought, if I could get Avery to print labels that said Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday on them, and if I could get them to put an adhesive on that would hang out in the humidity of the refrigerators and not fall off, that would be a great service. Well, he couldn't get Avery to do that. So he started his own company called Day Dots, and he just started producing these in his garage. And he started sending out mailings to different restaurants and so forth. And after 3 years, he had enough business that he could quit his regular job. And now he just sold that company for tens of millions of dollars. And because he found a need and he filled it. So always be looking to be of service, but also make sure you're doing philanthropy, tithing your time, tithing your money to churches and to nonprofit organizations. Anyway, so we have these seven categories of your life, and you want to have at least three specific goals in each of those seven categories, three things you want to achieve in the next year. You can have five-year plans, three-year plans, two-year plans, but at least for sure have a one-year plan for each of those areas. And then write the goals down and review the goals every day. Research done in universities now proves that people that write their goals down, just writing them down and reviewing them once a day, they are 200% more likely to achieve their goals than people who don't. So just writing them down and reviewing them, which is a simple step, and we'll teach you a lot more, is critical. It's radical, but it's simple and it works. The other thing about deciding what you want is most people tend to limit what they want by what they think is possible. And I want you to set down some time and sit down and write down what you'd really like to have if you could have anything you want. Be very, very specific. What kind of house would you live in? What color would the carpeting be? What would the view look like? How much money do you want to make? What's your net worth? What do you get when you retire? How much cash flow do you have in your business? What profit is there? Be very, very specific in each of these areas. But also what I want you to do is pick one specific goal. We're going to call it a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal that would be a breakthrough, a quantum leap for you in your career, something that would require you to stretch would require you to grow, would take you out of your comfort zone. Now, you don't have to have goals like that in every area of your life, but you want to have one major goal. For Mark and I in 1992, it was to write a best-selling book. Because we knew if we had a best-selling book and it got on the bestseller list and people would start hiring us more to speak, they'd pay us higher fees because we'd be celebrity draws. It was important for us to do that. Plus, we had what I call a divinely guided inspiration to write a book of stories that would motivate and inspire people. The kind of stories that all these motivational speakers and inspirational speakers use to close their talk, get them a standing ovation, moves people to the bottom of their soul. And so we did. And that book, as you know, was called Chicken Soup for the Soul. Well, that book was rejected and turned down by 144 publishers. Here's another key principle. Never give up. When the universe says no, you say next. We went to 33 publishers in New York with our agent. Everyone turned us down. Our agent even turned us down. He gave us the book back and said, I can't sell it. So what we did is we went out and we got 20,000 people to sign a form that said, I promise to buy a copy of Chicken Soup for the Soul when it's published. Because we knew that the publisher said, we know that we can sell 20,000 copies, we would risk the book because that'll recover all our expenses and then everything else would be above that. So we proved we could do it, but we still didn't get the contract. So we went to the American Booksellers Association with all these signed forms after being rejected by a whole bunch of other publishers. There were 4,000 booths of publishers at that conference. There are actually 10,000 publishers in America. We walked the floor for 2 days going from booth to booth to booth. Would you publish our book? Would you publish our book? Would you publish our book? And every person for the first day and a half said, no, we're not interested. Stupid title. People don't read short stories. Nobody knows who you guys are. Late on the second day, somebody said yes, and they published our book. That book, which nobody wanted, went on to sell 8 million copies in 41 languages and spawned a series of books which Time Magazine called the publishing phenomenon of the century, literally outselling everything. Now, what happens is we used a lot of these success principles to make that happen. We had this quantum leap goal, and then we applied something we call the rule of five. Every day, do five specific things to move your quantum leap goal forward. All of your other goals, you want to do a couple times a week, make sure you're doing something to forward them. If you were to do one thing every day in those seven areas, like save 10% of your money and invest it, exercise for 20 minutes, meditate, read for an hour, all these different disciplines of success will in fact take you to the next level. But you have to figure out what are those next steps for you. Now, so five things every single day. Sometimes we would send out five emails to people telling them about the book, five press releases. Sometimes we'd send out five copies of the book to celebrities, hoping that, we call them big mouths because they're people listen to, they're opinion molders, they would tell someone else. Once we actually sent a whole box of books over to the O.J. Simpson trial to Judge Ito to give to all the jury members because we read they were sequestered, they couldn't watch the news, they couldn't read magazines, but they were allowed to read books. Well, a few days later, all the jurors were walking into court carrying this book. Everyone's going, what's that? We got national headlines off of that book. You never know. I teach something called the law of probabilities. Write this one down. The law of probabilities. The more things you try, the higher the probability one of them will work. The more people you meet, the higher the probability one of them will become someone that will help you be more successful. The more people you ask, the higher the probability one of them will say yes. In other words, everything you try, every book you read, every seminar you go to, raises the probability that you're going to find an idea or a connection or a resource that will be the thing that can change your life. But you have to get out in the world, get into the game, meet people, play, experiment. The more things you try, the more likely something will work. Now, let's talk about this breakthrough goal one more time. Wesley Clark, General Wesley Clark, he was the head of NATO. He ran for the presidential nomination for the Democratic Party. I met him at a party, and he said to me, we were talking about my book, and he said, you know, one thing I've learned in my life, it doesn't take any more time to dream a big dream than it takes to dream a small dream. It doesn't take any more time to have a big idea than it is to have a small idea. Dave Liniger, the president and CEO, founder of RE/MAX International, real estate company that has literally, you know, rocked the world. I think he has over 9,000 salespeople now selling real estate for RE/MAX. He said to me, small dreams attract small people. Big dreams attract big people. So he had a big dream to totally recreate the way real estate's done, and he attracted a lot of people that wanted to make that dream come true. Chad Pograki, the age of 19, decides he wants to clean up the entire length of the Mississippi River. Well, he's 19 years old, never went to college, working class kid, living beside the river. He's watching all this trash flow down the river, oil drums, styrofoam boxes that people have used to cool their beer in, all these coolers and things, you know, boxes, even refrigerators went floating by. Well, he said he decided as far as he could see, he would clean up the river. Well, after a couple of days of being out there, he realized there were things he couldn't pick up. Someone had driven a car into the river. So he said, we need a barge. We need a crane. So he said, where do we get that? Well, he decided that the only people that had money that he knew would be corporations. So he went over, got in the phone book, looked up corporations because he didn't know any people who were, you know, important corporations. And the first one was Alcoa. So he called him up and said, hi, I'd like to get some money to clean up the Mississippi River. And they gave it to him. And he called Anheuser-Busch. That was the next on the list. Called the CEO and said, hi, can I, you know, get some money to clean up the river? Secretary in the CEO's office answered. She said, do you have a proposal? He said, what's a proposal? She said, well, I'll tell you how to write one. Everyone he asked, because of the purity of his intention, it was nothing other than service involved, allowed him to get yeses. Eventually, he owned three barges, one of which he now lives on. He enrolled 4,000 volunteers to help him clean up the river. He raised $2.5 million. He now has a board of directors that reads like the who's who of American business. He's won the Jefferson Award, which is the equivalent of the American Nobel Prize. And he's 20, I think 4 or 5 now. I met him because he was getting an honorary doctorate at St. Ambrose University the same time I was. The point being, these people had big dreams, big goals, and they attracted a lot of people to help them make them come true. So don't think small. Let yourself really think big. And the next step is you have to believe it's possible. Most people think success is possible for someone else. Well, I'll tell you, I grew up in West Virginia. I graduated from the half of the class that made the top half possible. West Virginia at that time had the 48th worst educational system in America. My family was more than dysfunctional. My dad was a raging alcoholic. My stepfather that came after was a workaholic and drank a lot. My mother was an alcoholic and kind of hated men because her father had died when she was 18. And also, you know, two men had divorced her. So she was not real happy. And the reality was that I grew up in that family, which, you know, didn't have any of the kind of principles that I'm teaching you. And if I can become successful, you can become successful. If you don't believe you can, you're going to stop yourself. I have a story in the book about a woman named Laura Schultz. Laura Schultz, at 65, did something she didn't think was possible. Her car began to slip back from the driveway because one of the kids had jumped in it and released the emergency brake, and it ran over her grandson's leg and it got stuck there. And she went out and literally lifted up the car so that he could get his leg out. And what happened was a lot of people heard about it and they wanted to interview about it. She wouldn't grant any interviews. And so what happened was one of my friends, who's a peak performer himself, would not give up without an interview. And when he called her about the sixth time, he said, why won't you give interviews? And she said, you know why? I'll tell you. When you're my age and you do something you didn't think you could do, you have to ask yourself a very difficult question. What else in my life could I have done that if I believed I could do it, I would have done? And at my age, you go, did you waste your whole life? Had I wasted my whole life? And so she didn't want to confront that feeling, so she didn't like to talk about it. Well, my friend Charlie Garfield said, look, here's the deal. What is it you would have liked to have done? She said, well, I wanted to become a geologist. Well, why didn't you? Well, my father said only the boys could go to college because we didn't have enough money for everybody. And back then, the men were the ones going out making a living. And so I never went to go to college. He said, well, do you own this house? She said, yeah. He said, why don't you mortgage it and take a little money out of it and go back to school? She said, Sonny, I'm 65 years old. I'd be 69 when I graduated. He said, I got some bad news for you. 4 years from now, you're going to be 69, whether you go back to school or not. So why not go back to school and get to 69 and have your degree? Well, she did. And as a result of that, she became an instructor at a local community college and still teaches geology to this day. But you don't want to waste a whole lot of your life because you didn't believe you could do something. Anything that anyone else can do, you can do. When Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, nobody thought that was possible. In the next year, 11 people broke it. We had a race recently, all college students, every one of them ran a less than 4-minute mile. But it was that first experience of someone doing it that made everyone else go, it is possible, and therefore it broke that mental barrier.